It is Monday, June the 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Many thanks for joining us. Coming up, a deadly shooting in the U.S. state of Florida.
Today marks the most deadly shooting in American history. The shooter was apparently armed with a handgun and a powerful assault rifle. This massacre is therefore a further reminder of how easy it is for someone to get their hands on a weapon that lets them shoot people in a school or in a house of worship or a movie theater or in a nightclub.
We'll hear from our correspondents and analysts about how the shooting affects U.S. national security. There was a vigil in front of the White House. We'll have some reaction, plus what's being said about the shooting by the U.S. presidential contenders and those on social media. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. President Obama has ordered U.S. flags to be flown at half-staff in memory of the victims of that mass shooting in Orlando, in which a gunman killed at least 50 people, wounded 53 others. It happened inside a nightclub with a primarily gay clientele. It happened early on Sunday morning. Authorities identified the shooter as 29-year-old Omar Mateen, an American-born to Afghan parents. Mateen had called the police at the time of the shooting to say that he was doing this with his pledged support to the Islamic State militants. The media arm of IS acknowledged that as such on Sunday. Police say Mateen opened fire inside the Pulse nightclub with an automatic weapon, an assault weapon, that can spray numerous bullets in just seconds. Witnesses who raced away from the massacre say the shots came even while the music played on and the guests kept dancing. Mateen traded gunfire with a police officer who was working extra hours at the club and then left the building and returned holding a number of hostages. The siege lasted for another 3 hours. President Obama declared it an act of terrorism.
But this is a sobering reminder that attacks on any American, regardless of race, ethnicity, religion, or sexual orientation, is an attack on all of us and on the fundamental values of equality and dignity that define us as a country. And no act of hate or terror will ever change who we are or the values that make us Americans. Today marks the most deadly shooting in American history. The shooter was apparently armed with a handgun and a powerful assault rifle. This massacre is therefore a further reminder of how easy it is for someone to get their hands on a weapon that lets them shoot people in a school or in a house of worship or a movie theater or in a nightclub. And we have to decide if that's the kind of country we want to be. And to actively do nothing is a decision as well.
As the news of that mass shooting became known on Sunday, vigils came together all across the country. One of those was here in Washington, just in front of the White House. VOA's Catherine Gibson was there.
Well, I mean, it was a very emotional moment. Members of the Code Pink protesters and people just, you know, coming by on bikes and with homemade signs and friends and neighbors. You could just see everybody kind of informally gathering. It was a very emotional crowd. Some people were openly weeping as the night went on.
And this comes in the middle of Gay Pride Month, does it not?
Right. A lot of the people who were attending this vigil were dressed in the, you know, the T-shirts and the outfits that you see in Washington, D.C. this, you know, time of year.
It's a tough one. They're using the word, I say they, other media other than us. Maybe we're using it also. I'm not sure. Of flash vigils. There was one in Lower Manhattan. It just like sprung up. A few people got together, used social media. The next thing you know, they had to close off streets and things in Greenwich Village.
That's exactly how this happened. Yeah. This popped up on Facebook a couple of hours ago. Some of the ladies who organized the Code Pink protests. And when I got there at 7:30, there were just a couple of them. And by the time I left 2 hours later, there were hundreds and hundreds of people.
You mentioned that the Washington Gay Pride group, the men's chorus, right?
Right.
Sang the national anthem, right?
Right, they did. They sang a couple of songs. They sang We Shall Overcome a couple of times. And then I think the most emotional moment was when they sang the national anthem with, you know, the White House all lit up in the back.
Well, we know how people from the gay community might feel about what happened in Orlando. I would think most people would all care about what happened there. But there are people that have the opinion that, you know, they get what they deserve sort of thing. Did you have people on the other side?
It's interesting that you bring that up because I noticed at the edge of the crowd a couple watching the vigil and looking a little bit uncomfortable. And I walked over to talk to them, and it turned out they were tourists visiting Washington, D.C. from South Carolina. And they said, you know, the first thing when we heard about this mass shooting, thought, oh, here they go with the protests again, just shoving it in our face. And they said, you know, they're going to try and use this to take away our guns, to take away our liberties, and we just feel really uncomfortable with this.
So that vigil went on for a while, did it, in front of the White House?
It did, at least an hour or so.
Yeah, amazing, amazing. And they are going on even throughout the world, I understand, too.
Right.
So this is a powerful thing. Catherine, thank you so much for coming back to tell us about it.
You're so welcome.
As we mentioned earlier, President Obama declared the shooting in Orlando an act of terrorism. He said the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI, is leading the investigation. He said no effort will be spared to find out what inspired the killer or if he had any links to terrorist groups. On that note, VOA's Victor Beatty asked Tom Sanderson, director of the Transnational Threats Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, how might the investigation go forward?
This is an individual who acted with minimal, if any, direction from abroad. But that I'm only saying that because of his very late claim to have allegiance to ISIS, which incidentally is not how you do it. You claim bayat or allegiance to the leader and not to the group. So that suggests he's a little bit amateurish in that respect. He obviously was able to kill a lot of people, though in a loud nightclub where people can't distinguish the sounds, that may not be all that impressive, but certainly terrible. There's still a lot to be known before I or anyone else can make a reasonable assessment as to how it's going to shake out. There are just so many things that need to be tracked down, run down, checked. But obviously we have a terrible incident on our hands, where there appears to be a connection to ISIS, even if only inspired, but doesn't matter in some ways. And it certainly doesn't matter to the families of those who were lost.
This was an obvious target against homosexuals, in your view?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's clear. And as the gunman's father indicated, that his son was extremely homophobic, which is awful and unfortunate, to say the least. And so we do have a hate crime on our hands, and it really is disgusting what he did and disgusting what ISIS does to gays and lesbians as far as treatment and how they kill them and the fact that they do kill them. So, it clearly was targeted. It's terrorism. It is a hate crime. And I can't wait till we find out exactly what this guy was about and who he was in contact with, and if there was anyone associated or who abetted this, that those people are apprehended and punished immediately.
Have we been warned repeatedly about possible lone wolf attacks like this, and can we expect more?
We've certainly been warned, and I think at this point we don't need any warnings. We didn't need warnings 2 days ago. You know, we know that it is a threat, that there are individuals out there who are inspired by ISIS and Al-Qaeda, let's not make this ISIS only, but Al-Qaeda as well, and who want to do the bidding of these groups. And they have been told that this is the right thing to do, that attacking the West and its allies who are attacking ISIS is important to help defend the Islamic State, to retaliate against those members of the coalition, which number more than 60 nations and institutions. So this is not anything that should surprise any single American We've seen lone wolf actors in the past. We know they're out there. We know that the ISIS spokesman Adnani has called on them. We know that the ISIS leader Baghdadi has called on them to attack whenever and wherever they can. So when someone is able to do it, they will. And this is not the last attack, unfortunately.
Tom Sanderson is director of the Transnational Threats Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He was speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty. We're joined now by VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Selden. Jeff, we heard Tom Sanderson of CISIS just say that likely this is not the last attack on U.S. soil. What are authorities doing to make sure these attacks are minimal or even non-existent?
Well, authorities are doing a lot, both in the United States and many of the countries with which the United States works, both in Europe and around the world. But you have two types of threats, and this incident in Orlando seems to be of the second type. The primary threat most people think about when they think about a terror attack is something that's actually carried out. It's directed by a terrorist organization, and it's carried out by agents operating on behalf of that terrorist organization, where it's either planned by them or directed by them. The other type of threat you have, and what it seems to be the case with the shooting in Orlando at the nightclub, is you have what is called an inspired attack, where you have somebody who's a sympathizer of the terrorist organization, in this case Islamic State, who decides to act on the terror group's behalf, but on their own volition. They decide to put their own plan into action, and they do it, as in has been reported in the case of the Orlando shooting, by pledging allegiance to a terror group as they're committing it, or by leaving some sort of note beforehand saying this is why they're doing it. The case of the inspired attack, which is sometimes called a lone wolf attack, is much, much more difficult, because these are people who may have expressed some sort of sympathy for the terror group before, but there may not be any significant evidence, any actionable evidence, that they're likely to carry out a terrorist attack. And in a country like the United States, merely believing something or sympathizing with a group isn't always enough for law enforcement to take action. And as we know in the case of the shooter at the Orlando nightclub, the FBI spoke to him three times. They had interest in him, and they spoke to him because of apparently sympathies or bragging he did, saying he had family ties to Al-Qaeda, and then also because the first known American suicide bomber in Syria went to the same mosque as this shooter.
You know, Jeff, that falls under the category you often hear long after these events happen, or sometimes almost immediately. Did everyone connect the dots? We know the FBI spoke with this man, and there are a lot of organizations that deal with terrorists and potential terrorists. Lots of list people look at things. This whole connect the dots thing is not as simple as it might appear on the surface.
It's not. One thing you have to remember, though, is that compared to much of the rest of the world, and you can refer back to the terror attacks in Brussels or in Paris, where numerous holes were found in the system European-wide, across Europe, where agencies within different countries and even the countries themselves were not communicating as effectively as they would like. The U.S. is much more advanced because of what happened on 9/11, the September 11, 2001 terror attacks. U.S. agencies, which were criticized back then, the FBI, CIA, other intelligence agencies, other law enforcement agencies, which had not communicated. Now you have the Director of National Intelligence in the U.S., which is an umbrella organization. You have the Department of Homeland Security, which helps bring all these agencies, all these law enforcement agencies and intelligence agencies together to make sure the dots are connected. And most of the time when you hear about a terrorist being arrested in the U.S., it's usually because they're being arrested as a result of a sting operation as they get on a plane to go and join the fight, whether it's in Syria or elsewhere. The number of attacks where you have lone wolves, though, that's very difficult because it's always, you can do as much research as you can, but what's going to push somebody past the point where they're going to, instead of thinking, you know what, they may support a terror organization, where they're going to act on behalf of a terror organization. It's also one of the things that scares so many law enforcement and intelligence officials about the approach taken by Islamic State, because Islamic State repeatedly has asked its supporters, has asked its fans and those who cheer it on to do these types of things, to act on behalf of the Islamic State, to do these lone wolf type of attacks. And in fact, some of the social media, some of the images that Islamic State supporters have been passing around even refers now to these lone wolves. And one of them said, well, the West may have muscles, but we have lone wolves. And so it's something that is actively encouraged. And again, it plays into the Islamic State strategy, which has been all along, to always appear like it has momentum and to always appear like it's bigger than it really is. Whether even, and another thing that law enforcement will look at, Islamic State, its media arm, Al-Amaq, has already claimed responsibility for this, but it may well have done that even if Islamic State had played no role, because Islamic State is taking losses on the ground in Iraq, in Syria, and even in Libya, where its stronghold is coming under an intense assault by some of the Libyan forces. So it needs whatever good news it can get in its view to show that it has momentum and that it's still potent and it can still strike.
VOA National Security Correspondent Jeff Seldon. Thank you so much, Jeff. Muslims across the U.S. are showing an outpouring of support for the people killed and wounded in that Orlando shooting and for their families. Wahood Walid, Executive Director of the Council on American-Islamic Relations, the Detroit chapter, said CARE and peace-loving Muslims everywhere are praying for everyone.
Obviously, there's no justification for wanton violence against any group of people in our society. Are not only treacherous in the actions of a traitor to one's country, but they're specifically the acts of a traitor to the Muslim community. We're in the holy month of Ramadan, and right after our nation just observed a very solemn event of the burial of an American Muslim hero, Muhammad Ali. And to have someone do something such as this to shine such a horrible light upon the Muslim community, which the Muslim community doesn't deserve, it is really treacherous and really treasonous.
And from their website, CARE.com, CARE says their vision is to be a leading advocate for justice and mutual understanding. The CARE mission, it says, is to enhance understanding of Islam, encourage dialogue, protect civil liberties, empower American Muslims, build coalitions that promote justice and mutual understanding. We continue our conversation now about the mass shooting in Orlando with VOA correspondent Michael Bowman. Mike joined my colleague Michael Lippin to talk about Washington reaction to the events in Orlando.
The overall somber tone and the sense of sorrow was very familiar. President Obama called it an act of terror and an act of hate. This is perhaps, I think, the 15th time that he has come out and had to say something in the wake of a mass shooting event in this country. It is different, however, in that after previous shootings, he has issued very strong calls and demands that America address its gun laws. He didn't do that this time.
There was more of a measured reference to the controversial issue about gun violence, wasn't there?
Indeed. He said that America has to look at its gun laws and decide if this is the kind of country that we want to have. And that is very different from previous calls demanding change and saying that he would accept nothing other than change.
So why do you think that he decided to use a different tack today?
I suspect only President Obama knows the answer to that. However, having said these things in the past and having nothing to show for it, perhaps he decided that in the last year of his time in office, that a different tact, and perhaps nudging rather than pounding the table and demanding, is the most appropriate course of action.
Do you think the fact that we're in a very heated presidential election season now also has something to do with it?
That is certainly within the realm of possibility. Any time that you have a tragedy and from that comes a call for a political result, it opens you up to the charge of politicizing what is a national tragedy. And he did face some of that criticism in the past, and perhaps he feels that in the heat of a presidential election, a national election, that is something to be avoided.
Well, in terms of the presidential candidates themselves, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump both tweeted about this shooting within the last couple of hours. And they both took a slightly different approach, you could say. Well, what was most significant, in your opinion, about what they said?
Hillary Clinton just issued a statement, and it very closely follows what President Obama said, almost to the choice of words. In Hillary Clinton's statement, she said this was an act of terror. This was also an act of hate. And that is almost word for word what President Obama said. Donald Trump issued several tweets. I'm just going to read a couple of them. Horrific incident in Florida, praying for all the victims and their families. When will this stop? When will we get tough, smart, and vigilant? And then in a different tweet, is President Obama finally going to mention the words radical Islamic terrorism? If he doesn't, he should immediately resign in disgrace.
I did see those. So that may not be too surprising from Trump, because he said similar things before, hasn't he?
He has. I think that there is a stark contrast between these two candidates in terms of the tone that they use and what they choose to highlight in the wake of this kind of a tragedy. But Donald Trump never shies from controversy, and some of those comments are receiving a fair amount of attention, both negative and positive, from some of his supporters.
Well, thank you very much to our Senate correspondent, Michael Bowman, for giving us an overview of the reaction to this tragedy in Orlando.
Thank you, Michael.
Many thanks, gentlemen, for that. Now a look at what else is being said online about the Orlando shooting. International Edition's Lori London is here. Lori, what appears to be many layers this tragedy? What are people saying about it all?
Well, you're right, Steve. There are. Besides immense grief, people are expressing views on guns, on Islam, and on gay rights. Edward Samani writes, Islamophobia is not tolerated here with the hashtag gun reform now. But others like Robbie Travers say, radical Islam is peace? Tell that to the family of the 50 murdered individuals due to jihadism. And then you've got at Real Rotation 27 writing, this is disgusting and abhorrent. I believe that this is not a Muslim issue, but rather a gun issue. How many people have to die? Also reacting, you've got at Cam VTV, angry at the president. She writes, Obama wants to get on TV and talk about guns while he floods my city with refugees who openly hate Christians, Americans, and the LGB community. And right back on the other side, you've got at Left Side Annie writing, disband that terrorist organization, the NRA, which is the National Rifle Association.
Hey, Lori, any tweets about gay Americans and that part of the story at all?
Yes, actually, at Harinef writes, queer Muslims exist and we are in mourning too. And also, and finally, you've got at Jeremy Allen Moss saying, I literally never want to hear again that LGBT people in the bathroom are a threat to public safety. And, you know, besides all of these things, there are still people calling for tolerance, like at Cherokee AW17. He writes, when are we, the human race, going to come together, say enough is enough, gay, straight, blue, black, white, and brown, let's get along. Steve, back to you.
And many thanks to you, Lori. International Edition's Lori London. You can find Lori on Twitter at Lori London. That's LoriLundin. I'm there as well at VOA Norman, and you can find International Edition, our program, on Twitter at VOA_IE. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Common wisdom has long held that mammal species really didn't expand until after the land-roaming dinosaurs became extinct some 66 million years ago. However, a new study suggests that 10 to 20 million years before the dinosaurs disappeared, ancestors of today's mammals had already begun to greatly branch out. The study also points out that the diversity of prehistoric mammals also suffered greatly as the result of the same extinction event that wiped out the dinosaurs. The researchers suggest that one of the reasons why so many believe that these warm-blooded animals were repressed during the age of dinosaurs may be that many of the early mammalian fossils found up until recently didn't really reflect a variation in species. But over recent years, fossils of more mammal species have been found. These have included various dog-sized and hooved animals that had a variety of teeth. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us today. In addition to the mass shooting in the U.S. city of Orlando, Florida, there are a lot of other stories going on worldwide being followed here on The Voice of America. They include the following. An Iraqi general says troops seeking to recapture the Islamic State stronghold Fallujah have opened a safe corridor that humanitarian workers say has allowed some 4,000 residents to flee the embattled city in the past day. The United Nations last week voiced concern for the fate of as many as 90,000 civilians believed trapped in the city without basic food and medical necessities. A powerful bomb blast ripped through a commercial area of Beirut, Lebanon on Sunday, severely damaging one of the country's largest banks. There were no immediate reports of casualties. Television footage showed shattered glass everywhere, badly damaged vehicles near the blast site. Investigators were reported working late into the day on Sunday to determine the target of that blast. European football's governing body, UEFA, threatened on Sunday to expel both Russia and England from the Euro 2016 in France if their fans continue violent behavior. More than 35 people were injured in Marseille late on Saturday, after British and Russian soccer fans broiled in and around the Stade Velodrome. Also, an inquiry looking into that. That was not the only incident at the month-long tournament in Nice. Violence between Northern Ireland football fans and local residents injured 7 people. Many thanks, everyone, for joining us here on The Voice of America for International Edition. Latest world news is straight ahead. Hope you'll stay tuned. For our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Chaz Hall, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. We hope you have a great Monday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Since Russia's invasion of Crimea and then eastern Ukraine, it has become clear that Russia is unwilling to abide by international law or live by the rules of the institutions that Russia joined at the end of the Cold War, said U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs Victoria Nuland. To counter the threat posed by Russia's aggression and deter any military moves against NATO territory, the United States and its NATO allies have maintained a military presence on land, sea, and air along NATO's eastern edge in Poland, Romania, Bulgaria, and the 3 Baltic states. All 28 allies have participated in exercises, training sessions, and patrols throughout Europe supported by the U.S. To press Moscow to bring an end to the violence in Ukraine and fully implement its commitments under the Minsk agreements, the United States has worked with the European Union, the G7, and other like-minded nations to impose successive rounds of tough economic sanctions on Russia over the past 2 years. These sanctions, combined with low oil prices and Russia's continued structural weaknesses, have imposed significant costs. The United States is working to increase the resilience of countries across Europe that face pressure from Russia. To help Ukraine better monitor and secure its borders, deploy its forces more effectively, and defend its sovereignty and territorial integrity, the United States has committed over $600 million in non-lethal security assistance. The United States is also helping countries in Eastern Europe and Eurasia to strengthen their democratic institutions, reform their economies, and fight corruption. Energy diversification remains a key component in protecting vulnerable countries over dependence on Russian energy. At the same time, the U.S. will continue to look for ways to work with Russia in areas of common interest, including nonproliferation, nuclear security, and counterterrorism. Finally, the United States will continue to engage directly with those Russian businesses and individuals who share American interests and values. And the United States will continue to speak out against laws and policies that impede the work of Russian civil society and violate the fundamental rights of freedom of expression, assembly, and association in Russia and elsewhere in the region. The United States will continue to strongly support its NATO allies while promoting freedom and democracy throughout Europe and Eurasia.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.